Hello, and welcome to Unfit to Print. It is a McGill Daily radio show, and it's hosted by Evelyn Logan. You are currently listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. Right now, you're hearing Blood Orange. The song is titled You're Not Good Enough. I'll let it play for a little bit, and then we'll get into it. So, welcome to the second episode of the revival of Unfit to Print. So, first we're going to start off by recapping the very last McGill Daily issue. So, this was the last issue of the year, of this semester, and it was a special issue. It covered Women's History Month. So, our editorial was titled The Origins of Women's Rights at McGill. And the focus of the editorial was on McGill's neglected history of their treatment of women. So, when McGill finally did allow women to join the university, they kind of don't share in their publications, and you can find the sources within the editorial on McGillDaily.com. They don't really share that women were in separate classrooms, had completely separate professors, and they lived in separate residences from men. So, our editorial really focuses on this, points all these things out, and it's really great. You should give it a read. So, some of my other favorite articles from this issue are the following. In the SciTech section, I really liked this article called Vancouver Lawyers Use of AI in Legal Proceedings Sparks Ethics Debate, and it's written by Gemma Holland. So this article was about a recent court case where a lawyer used AI to source court cases that were actually fake. So what happened, the lawyer basically was trying to find cases to back up her point, and she used ChatGPT. She assumed that ChatGPT was going to find cases that were real. In fact, these cases were fake and manufactured, and she used them in real legal proceedings. So yeah, and the article really covers the fallout of this and also the implications of this in future court proceedings. And of course, the lawyer got in trouble for it. So next up in the culture section, I really liked this article called A Look Into Tamco Vu's Hybrid Condition. And this article was written by Enid Kohler. So it was really good. It was incredible. So the Hybrid Condition was an installation. It was featured at the Montreal Arts Interculturels. Sadly, it isn't on view anymore to see, but this article is an excellent recap of this piece. So basically, the Hybrid Condition, how the artist explains it, it details how Vietnamese Canadians understand their mixed heritage. They're basically between two different worlds in that sense. And it really details the mixed feelings of belonging amongst these people who live in different countries and have ties to different countries. So it's super interesting. Go check that one out. And next, and very, very last, I loved this article in the commentary section called My Womanhood is a Work in Progress. And this wonderful article was written by Iris O'Ryan. It is absolutely incredible. She writes about her womanhood from a trans perspective. And I feel like it's very interesting because we have been hearing recently in media, I don't know if you guys follow Dylan on TikTok. She's a trans woman who basically is, or was, I'm not sure if she's still doing it actually, detailing her transition. It's like this series that she did called like Days of Girlhood. And it's so interesting how she basically walks all her viewers through this transition. Well, the way that Iris puts it is just beautiful in this article. I think it's very interesting that Iris chose womanhood versus girlhood. I think you can see like in the media with movies like Barbie, trends on TikTok like Girl Dinner, or I'm I'm just a girl. Girlhood is really having its moment, but Iris's article on womanhood and her journey is profound and super interesting. You guys need to check it out. And yeah, so moseying our way onto the compendium section, you can find Literary Rex, aka Clit Rex, for your horoscope. If you guys are an Aquarius like me, we got Dawn by Octavia Butler. Very, very interesting and actually relevant later in the show. And then if you're an Aries, as it is Aries season right now, you got Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. So yeah, that's my recap of this very past and very last article. Go check it out. Definitely get it in print, guys. Don't let print media die. I'm gonna play a little short song for you, and then I'll be right back to talk about the stories that the McGill Daily has highlighted this year, with a special attention to those that highlight women. So that was Sir Lady Make 'em Fall by Live. You are currently listening to CKUT at 90.3 FM. It is Tuesday, April 2nd, and it is 5:09 p.m. So this is Unfit to Print with Evelyn Logan, and we're talking about stories from the McGill Daily newspaper that were featured this past year that talk about women and highlight womanhood in a very special light. So very first, we have an article by Elaine Yang called Speculative Worlds, and it is how queer writers of color continue to expand the speculative fiction genre. So this article covers the keynote speech made by Nalo Hopkinson at the McGill Queer History Month celebration. She is a Jamaican-Canadian science fiction writer who brings Black people and elements of her Jamaican heritage into her works. I think it's very interesting how Black women and Black people in general have such a great grip on the science fiction genre. Some other notable Black female authors in this genre are Octavia Butler, who you would have gotten if you read the horoscope for this past issue, and if you're an Aquarius. And interestingly enough, this article mentioned how some of Hopkinson's work was labeled as escapism by her critics. And this is really interesting because I recently watched a film, a little clip of it that I'm going to play for you in a second, called The Last Angel of History by the Black Audio Films Collective. It's a group of Black people who came together and created many films detailing the Black experience and specifically about Afrofuturism. So this film, The Last Angel of History, is really about, it's about Afrofuturism, and it's an examination of Black culture and how Afrofuturism is applicable in this era that we're living in. So the clip that I'm going to play for you is of two interviews of two Black science fiction authors, Greg Tate and Ishmael Reed. So they talk about science fiction and the genre and how it is applicable to the Black experience. So I'll let you guys have a quick little listen.
And trying or attempting to make this music, have no idea, you know, of really those two very simple elements. Just take the salt, take the pepper, mix it together, and what you come up with, you have a nice piece of soup. You know, you put some onions in there and some croutons, and you sit back and you sip it, and it's good.
For me, I came in really to breakbeat, and breakbeat music was the main, you know, rebel driver wanting to be rebellious with music, full stop, you know. And hip-hop was generated by, you know, by breakbeat. And I think from the point of view where I am, where I'm at, we had a European background to look over our shoulder. And we had an American dream to look at in the, you know, in the forefront. But I think the American dream, as you pursued it, wasn't no longer the American dream.
After the end of the world. Don't you know that yet? After the end of the world, don't you know that yet? It's after the end of the world, don't you know that yet?
Well, I've always contended that Black existence and science fiction are one and the same. And that's as someone who has obviously experienced life as a Black person and has been reading science fiction since he was maybe 9 or 10 years old.
After the end of the world, don't you know that yet?
The form itself, the conventions of the narrative in science fiction, in terms of the way they deal with the subject, it's usually someone who is at odds with the apparatus of power in the society and whose profound experience is one of cultural dislocation, alienation, estrangement.
We're not believed. You know, we're like aliens trying to, tell our experience to Earthlings. People don't believe us. You see, we live in, there's a normal life in this country where the police don't plant evidence, they don't lie, you know, and drug dealers call ahead and make appointments before they execute people. This is sort of like the upper class white world. You know, we try to tell them that this doesn't happen in Oakland where I live. You know, and they say, well, your experience is so incredible. You're making this up and you're paranoid. So I think living in this country for African Americans is a far out experience.
So yeah, that was a clip from The Last Angel of History, and it was basically talking about how Black people and the Black experience is best explained through science fiction. So I feel like it's very interesting that this article chose to highlight an author who does do science fiction and who incorporates elements of Black culture within it. So very interesting, very cool. Make sure you check out that article, Speculative Worlds by Elaine Yang. So yeah, and another thing that I really want to note, if you're interested in science fiction and you want to read more science fiction by Black authors, don't hesitate to check out Sophia Stewart. She was actually the author of a book series that directly inspired The Matrix. And it was a crazy landmark court case where in the beginning they were not giving her any credits to the film or to the film series or anything, but she won a court case saying that the movies, the films, everything was directly inspired by her book series. So make sure to check her out. That is Sophia Stewart. So back into articles that I really loved this year, this past year that the McGill Daily published that really highlight women in an interesting way is this article by Ariane Fournier, which is Giants of Modern Art in Parallel Play. This article was a review of the MMFA's latest exhibition on Georgia O'Keeffe and Henry Moore. So I know Henry Moore is a man, but and we are talking about women here, but this article was so amazing. I could not talk about it. So basically, this article was a recap of an art exhibition that is actually still on view in the Montreal Museum of Fine Arts until June 2nd. So this exhibit concerns elements of nature, like flowers, bones, stones, and shells. And these elements are divided into four rooms, so you can go into each room and see the two artists work side by side and do an excellent comparison. So in this exhibit, George O'Keeffe's work is primarily paintings. So Ariane really talked about her paintings of flowers, which at that time she deemed them erotic. And I'm certain that they could be seen that way next to Henry Moore's work. And his medium was sculpture, and it was primarily focused on the bone. And the materials that he used were very smooth, very lovely wood. So Ariane described their works as playing together beautifully. And I really want to quote her at this point because she said something wonderful, quote, "Moreover, by giving their subjects anthropomorphic qualities, they prompt us to recognize nature's vitality, to pause and consider our interconnectedness." Beautifully put. This is a wonderful article that you should definitely check out. It is Giants of Modern Art in Parallel Play by Ariane Fournier. And this was published not in our latest issue, in the issue before. So if you want to check it out, you should go to our website or on the stands. You might be able to pick up an imprint copy still. So yeah, next I want to briefly highlight an article called The Scholasticide in Gaza by Ansley Yang, and it is an introduction to the term scholasticide that I did not know of before reading this article, so it is very interesting. You should check that out. And it was a term that was developed in the wake of Israel's bombing of Gaza's last standing university, so definitely go check that one out. I read that online. It was a wonderful, informative article. You need to give it a read. So very next, I'm going to have another song for you to listen to, and then perhaps an ad.
Solo dans la salle, va qui camine à Tibé, va qui dans la main. Jamila Tibim Balikido la Mandunia Mampella Puru Dola Salva Gikamila Tibim Balikido la Mandunia La de la Pupil and Bataman La de la Pupil and Bataman Tin on the side of the wall Give me the Pupil and Batana Tin on the Taba La de la Pupil and Bataman La de la Pupil and Bataman Tin on the side of the wall Give me the Pupil and Batana Tin on the Taba La de la Pupil and Batana Tin on the Taba Give me the Pupil and Batana Tin on the Taba La de la Pupil and Batana Tin on the Taba Mina tibimba de kidola mandunia Mampela suru dola sale bagika mina tibimba de kidola mandunia La de la popela mbala man La de la popela mbala man Tin long sala da wo Give me the la popela mbala toda na tin long taba La de la popela mbala fo La de la popela mbala fo Tifo long sala da wo Give me the la popela mbala toda na tin long taba La de la popel mora toda la tierra no estaba. Que me den la popel mora toda la tierra no estaba. La de la popel mora toda la tierra no estaba. Que me den la popel mora toda la tierra no estaba.
And we're back. This is Evelyn Logan, and you're listening to Unfit to Print on CKUT. So the song you just heard was called Mampele Sure by Florence Adjoni. And we are back recapping the articles that highlighted women this year at the McGill Daily. So next, I want to talk about somewhat of an article series written by Emma Brainbridge and Zoe Lister. And this series, I found two articles about it. It was detailing the conflict between McGill administration and the Mohawk Mothers, starting with the very first article titled Totally Betrayed, Mohawk Mothers Speak Out About New Vic, and later, with the second article, Judgment Delivered in New Vic Case, Judge Deems Mohawk Mothers at Risk of Irreparable Harm. So the Mohawk Mothers are a group of indigenous women called the Conestancera. I'm so sorry for that mispronunciation. And they are a part of an ongoing conflict between McGill and them over the excavation of a growing site, a construction site, and these two articles did such a great job of neatly going over the conflict and explaining all of the developments. So basically, McGill is trying to build on land that the Mohawk Mothers believe is ancestral burial grounds and unmarked graves from the MK Ultra experiments that took place in the 60s. And this conflict has been going on for several years as McGill wants to continue construction while the Mohawk Mothers just want construction to halt so that a proper investigation can be held. For the most latest happenings and latest news, you can follow the Mohawk Mothers on Instagram at Take Back Tekona. Tacon Attack on Instagram. So that is interesting. That conflict, it has not been fully resolved. However, in the latest article, the judge did rule that the Mohawk mothers should have more rights and they should halt construction. So hopefully the developments are going in the right direction. So yeah, the very next article is a personal shout out. It's my own article. I did write the article. It's called You Exist Too Much, and it is a queer Palestinian story of self-love. So this article is a review of a book, which is You Exist Too Much, and the author is Zaina Arafat. So this was this author's debut article. I was so honored to read it. It was absolutely incredible. And Zaina Arafat is a queer Palestinian woman. So this book is not a memoir. However, it is very personal to her. And it is a love story of self-love, also relational love. And it's also a story of mother-daughter love. So very, very interesting, very complex. One of my favorite parts about this book is that the protagonist is unnamed, which totally adds to the intrigue and allows you to get to know the protagonist without any of the extra preconceptions or things that come with knowing somebody's name, which I don't think is that big of a deal. When I first started reading, I was like, huh, it's weird that I don't know the protagonist's name. But as I kept going along, I really felt like the protagonist being unnamed was really symbolic of allowing you to get to know someone without all the things that names can bring. And that's what the book was. It was as you were going, you were really uncovering the history of a character, and it was incredible. So this book is an excellent read. I suggest very good for summer. At times it can be dense. I do recommend checking out the content warnings before reading it, but it is really, really good. So, and it's also one of the first romance books that I've read where the author does such a good job of explaining the difficulties that intersectionality present to a real life person. It's a very genuine novel, and I feel like you should definitely check it out. So yeah, I'm gonna now play a clip from the News Collective. Check it out.
Third car in the convoy approached, and the passengers began to transfer to it the wounded who'd survived the second strike in order to get them out of danger. But then a third missile struck them. All seven World Central Kitchen volunteers were killed in the strike. That again, Haaretz reporting the Israeli military ordered the drone strikes mistakenly, thinking a member of Hamas was part of the aid convoy. When we come back, the Biden administration continues to send a massive amount of arms to Israel, including 1,800 2,000-pound bombs that are strong enough to level city blocks. We'll speak to former State Department official Josh Paul and a U.S. soldier who's refusing to remain silent. Stay with us. Everywhere we looked was burning, by Amel. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The deadly attack on the World Central Kitchen convoy comes as the Biden administration continues to send massive amounts of arms to Israel. Reuters is reporting the Biden administration is considering a new $18 billion arms package for Israel that would include dozens of F-15 fighter jets. This is in addition to the recent U.S. approval of 1,800 2,000-pound bombs and 500 bombs, as well as 25 F-35 fighter jets. We're joined now by Josh Paul, a veteran State Department official who worked on arms deals and resigned in protest of a push to increase arms sales to Israel amidst its siege on Gaza. He's the former director of Congressional and Public Affairs for the Bureau of Political Military Affairs in the State Department, where he worked for 11 years. Now a non-resident fellow at Dawn, that's Democracy for the Arab World Now. Josh, thanks so much for joining us again. I mean, in light of what we are talking about right now, the World Central Kitchen suspending its operations in Gaza after their six workers and their Palestinian driver were hit by airstrikes, Israeli airstrikes. Can you talk about these latest news? First, the Washington Post exposed the sale of the
Okay, and that was a clip from Democracy Now! We are back. This is Unfit to Print with your host, Evelyn Logan. So we're about at half the hour. It is 5:31, and I really wanted to give you a couple of my recommendations. I'm going to call this segment Ev's Rex. So very first, I've been looking at the artwork of this one amazing artist from Mozambique called Cassie Namota. Cassie Namota is a black painter who lives a nomadic life. She's grown up in a lot of different cities, a lot of different countries, and she draws works that reflect where she draws and paints works that reflect where she currently lives and typically features black subjects. And one of my favorite works by her is Nude Maria, which looks very, very similar to a classical work by Marie Cassatt. Her work is incredible. You guys should totally check her out. And she's very young. She does a lot of gallery exhibitions across the States and in Europe. And her work is doing incredibly well. So very up next on my list of recs is New Blue Sun. New Blue Sun is that flute album by Andre 3000. Andre 3000, you've definitely heard of his name before. He is one half of the group Outkast. I know you guys have heard Hey Ya. It's incredible. His album is absolutely incredible. I have a little bit of that album to play for you if you don't mind. These songs are really, really very long, but I recommend for, you know, meditation, steady music. It's very, very calming. And however, I do have to warn you, there's no words, there's no talking, there's no rapping. And this is one of those tracks. Thank you. So that was, I swear, I really wanted to make a rap album, but this is literally the way the wind blew me this time. I'll let it play while I talk. And that was Andre 3000, the first track of his brand new album. So on my very last recommendation for this second episode of Unfit to Print, I think that you guys need to treat yourself. Number one, you deserve it. And number two, especially for those that are in university and you find yourself, you're like stumbling into final season, you deserve a treat. Get yourself a treat. I heard that Dairy Queen is doing $1.99 blizzards. Get yourself one of those. And keep in mind, McGill students, class is over in 10 days. Well, 8 if you only count school days. So you have totally got this. No stress. All right, it is 5:38 and Unfit to Print is officially taking calls. You can call in at 514-448-4013. I'll hit it again. 514-448-4013. I'm gonna finish out this song, give you guys some time to call in. But yeah, call in and give me a shout. Hello, guys. And Unfit to Print has their very first caller. It is GT from Windsor. I'm putting you through right now. Hello, GT? GT, you there? GT, are you there? Hello, GT? Oh, you can hear me loud and clear.
Loud and clear.
How are you?
I'm well. I heard you're rocking your inaugural show, and I dashed to be part of it.
All right. Well, this is only the second episode. How are you liking it so far?
I like the chill vibe with the Andre 3000 jam that he's rocking.
Mm-hmm.
Not on the character. I can't say I'm an Andre 3000 groupie, but I do like the pivot that he's made with that. It's soothing.
It's very, very soothing. I'm glad that you can see the direction that I'm trying to go with the show. Do you have any music that you know of that kind of goes with this vibe that you would like to hear on the show today?
I would rock, if you have an instrumental version. I'm a big, when I'm trying to chill up and convey that vibe or enjoy the vibe that you're trying to convey with your show, my go-to is either Sade, Adu instrumental, or Keiko Matsui.
Keiko Matsui. And
yes, indeed.
Tell us a little bit more about Keiko Matsui.
Yeah, Cherry Blossoms, to be specific.
Mm-hmm.
It's right along this alley in which you're trying to convey to your listening public.
Okay. We can get you some
tremendous
Keiko Matsui.
Cherry Blossoms.
Cherry Blossoms. All right. Well, GT, before you go, I really want to talk with you about, you know, it's Women's History Month. Is there a woman in your life that you would like to celebrate on air today?
Well, you don't have enough time in your show.
Oh.
To celebrate all the women that have been instrumental in my life.
All right.
It's been, there's far too many. But I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. First, I got to start with my bride, right?
Wow.
Because I've been blessed with a tremendous wife, and if I make it till Friday, it'll be our 27th wedding anniversary. So
27 years. Wow.
Yeah, if I make it to Friday. So first and foremost, and she's the mother of our children, for which we're blessed with three. And then I also would have to acknowledge my mother, because not for her, I'm not here right now.
That's what I'm talking about.
I've been blessed with a lot of strong women in my life, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my daughter, who's also a very strong, upstanding woman of character. So,
wow.
I'll leave it at that. I'll just give you a natural hat trick of women. How about that?
How about that? Wow. Thank you so much, GT from Windsor. That was incredible. Do you have anything else to add before we play Cherry Blossom by Keiko Matsui?
Aside from all the women that help power this world, keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. You have been a wonderful very first caller on my show, Unfit to Print. Have a
Thanks
great evening.
Me. Continue. You as well. Continue success. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, guys. That was GT from Windsor, and he requested Cherry Blossom by Keiko Matsui, and that is what you are about to hear. And that was Cherry Blossom by Keiko Matsui. This is Unfit to Print, and the hour is coming to a close. It is currently 5:50, Tuesday, April 2nd. So I want to say one final song, Dreamin'. This will be Dreamin' by John Doe. If anybody else would like to give me a call, tell me something good, you can. Otherwise, the show will come to a close just a little bit early. But first, the show won't come to a close until you hear this song. It's incredible. And here it is.
My drift. Slept on the best, that's the bet. I'ma step. You think you want me back? I'm thinking about the chips. Yeah, been broke, but the pain didn't show. Only get fine or ashamed what I owe. No crying, no spilled milk. I let that maid know. You'll miss it till it's gone. That's just how that game goes.
And that was Dreamin' by John Doe. Thank you so much for participating in Unfit to Print on this Tuesday evening. You are currently listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, and this is the Unfit to Print show with Evelyn Logan, your host. Have a great night and talk to you soon.
We're not responsible. It's really hard to avoid miscalculations on all sides. And again, from the Iranian point of view, they can't let this go unresponded to.
And
Akbar, if you can talk about why you think this has happened right now and what you think this means. We have response from all over. Ali Vaez, Iran analyst for the International Crisis Group, told Al Jazeera Israel may be pushing to expand the war in what would be a, quote, win-win situation for Israel. Why?
Sure. So this is so much about the political calculus of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And that's very much the assessment, not just here in Washington, among a lot of U.S. officials who are really worried about where this is going. It's also the assessment of a lot of Israelis, right? That Netanyahu sees this as a moment to create a rally around the flag effect. And timing-wise, I think it's important to remember, 6 months into their war in Gaza, they haven't gotten the scalp that they wanted to of Yahya Sinwar, the Hamas leader in Gaza. They haven't brought home the hostages, the Israelis they wanted to bring home. So it's a distraction, right, for Netanyahu. I think in terms of the significance, too, we cannot help but think about the most horrifying aspect of this, right, which is the N-word, the nuclear word. Because of President Donald Trump withdrawing from the Iran nuclear deal, which was working, Iran is now closer to developing a nuclear weapon than it ever has been before, right? That's a Trump decision. Now, if Iran assesses they need to establish deterrence and confidence and send a signal to Israel, will they go down that path? And that's where the U.S. starts to risk being involved, too. So what I'm hearing a lot from my sources across kind of U.S. government and intelligence is there's a lot of alarm bells going off right now, saying the Israelis seem to want to suck us as Americans into a broader war, potentially in Lebanon, potentially with Iran. And what's really striking is that the highest levels of the Biden administration, whether that's the White House, the State Department, don't seem yet to be managing those risks. There are quiet diplomatic channels, but there's no guarantee. And what you have from the U.S. side is rhetoric saying we don't want to see a regional war, but you don't have actual action, right? You don't see the U.S. saying we won't send Israel fighter jets, bombs, et cetera, because of the risk of war. And I think that's what's lacking right now.
And you mentioned the domestic problems that Netanyahu faces as the protests, a massive protest for calling for his resignation grow. Is it your sense that the extremism of the actions of the Netanyahu government will also grow as a sort of as a means of deflecting, not distracting, but really deflecting the opposition he faces internally?
It's a real risk, Juan, and I think there's a few factors there, right? So, of course, Hezbollah, which is the Iran-backed militia in Lebanon, Hezbollah has indisputably hit Israelis, right? There is a lot of fear among Israelis, tens of thousands of whom have left northern Israel for fear of an October 7th-style attack by Hezbollah. So Netanyahu can tap into that fear, and the added layer of this is that there's Netanyahu's political survival, and then there's the question of who comes after Netanyahu if he does fall? And at a moment where upwards of 70% of the Israeli public are in a sort of pro-war mood, right, are still feeling under attack, into retaliation, there's also a benefit for other politicians to seem hawkish. So that means Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, who's kind of led the threats against Lebanon. It could also mean some of the candidates who the U.S. really has talked about as alternatives to Netanyahu, like Benny Gantz. There isn't really an anti-hawkish narrative inside the Israeli body politic right now. There's an anti-Netanyahu one. So the actual risk of war, I think, is only growing.
We want to thank you so much for being with us, Akbar Shahid Ahmed, senior diplomatic correspondent for HuffPost. We'll link to your articles at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Cinema Politica invites you to the theatrical release of Silvicola starting from March 22nd, with opening weekend screenings followed by a Q&A with award-winning director Jean-Philippe Marquis. At a time when the planet's old-growth forests are threatened as never before, Jean-Philippe Marquis has crafted a dazzling and unsettling film essay on forestry practices in the Pacific Northwest, home to the world's tallest trees. Juxtaposing sublime aerial imagery with Velite workplace footage, he meets people whose livelihood is connected to the forest economy and culture, tempering a critique of neoliberal forestry practices with an up-close understanding for people who labor within the system. The opening weekend of Sylvicola will take place at the Cinémathèque Québécoise and Cinéma Public, with screenings starting from Friday, March 22nd. For more information, go to cinemapolitica.org/film/Sylvicola. We hope to see you there.
Sego.
Buju, Anin.
Danach, ah, ak anzenu shup with an.
Tante.
Hey, inu radikai.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Sego, Skenega. Over the next six episodes, I'm going to introduce you to language speakers and language learners from Six Nations of the Grand River Territory. We will learn about what drives their passion to keep our languages alive and how they're doing it in different ways. We're going to hear music composed and sung in the language, and who knows, you may even pick up some words. But Words and Culture is more than just six episodes of the Haudenosaunee language family. Throughout the next several months, we're going to have other hosts introduce you to more Indigenous languages, including Inuktitut, Cree, Anishinaabemowin, and the Athabaskan language family. Joktagoyanyats, my name is January. January Rogers, and I'll be your host on this journey into the languages of the Haudenosaunee people. I am Mohawk in Tuscarora, and I live and work as a writer, a publisher, and a media producer from my home on Six Nations, or Oswego, as we call it. When I first opened the show, you heard me say Sego. That is a Gonyageha word for hello, but it's not spelled like it sounds. It's spelled SHE:KON. The letter K sounds like a G. The Mohawk language is called Gonyageha, and yep, you guessed it, those G sounds are actually spelled with K.